You are listening to Impact Hustlers, and I am your host, Michael Schaffrath. I have made it my mission to inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs to solve some of the world's biggest social and environmental problems. And for this reason, I am speaking to some of the best entrepreneurs out there who are solving problems such as food waste, climate change, poverty, and homelessness. My goal is that Impact Hustlers will inspire you either by starting an impact business yourself, by joining the team of one, or by taking a small step, whatever that may be, towards being part of the solution to the world's biggest problems. All right, it's really exciting to have you on Impact Hustlers, Joel. Plastic pollution is a topic that I've been following for a while, and there seems to be some interesting solutions, but nothing really that seems to be operating at scale yet. And I'm really excited to talk to you about how CleanHub thinks about kind of solving that problem at scale. And obviously, you're still early in your journey, but you're already showing some really interesting traction on removing plastic from planet Earth. And it's great to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Michael. Really, really pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks for joining. So let's start with the early days of CleanHub. I think you were actually working for a startup before in a kind of marketing function and working there. And tell me about the time you first discovered or kind of really spent time on the plastic pollution problem and decided to say, okay, I'm going to launch a company to solve that problem. Tell me about how CleanHub actually started.
Yeah, I think I can actually go back to all the way into my childhood because I grew up sailing. I grew up at Lake Constance, had an amazing childhood, basically constantly playing in or on the water. And when I graduated from high school, I spent a couple of weeks in Costa Rica learning to surf, and somehow that stuck, and I was really submerged in the subculture of surfing. Was also able to spend really nice semesters abroad. One of them was in Hawaii, where you really discover how close people live to the ocean, how much it means to them. And somehow that also happened to me. And generally during my studies, I spent a lot of time working during the semester to take the semester breaks off, and was really fortunate enough to see quite a bit of the world before I started my first job. And in these early days, like in 2010, 12, 13, if you went to Indonesia, for example, you were already very much exposed to the problem of plastic pollution before mainstream media was talking about it here in Europe. Once I was done with school, I went into a B2B SaaS company called Avrius. We did fleet management software, and it was a super interesting learning experience, but I was never really passionate about the topic, right? But I went in there to really understand how to build a company. And after around 2.5 years, I said that I think the time has come to at least try to do the first company. And then obviously the question was, what shall I do? And for me, I really wanted to follow something that I was passionate about, and there was plastic pollution and the entire topic of the circular economy. I didn't know anything about how the solution should look like, but working in the startup ecosystem, it was clear to me that I wanted to do something that can scale and that should also be profitable, because I believe the solution needs to be profitable to work at scale. That's basically it. And then I quit my job end of 2018, spent a lot of time on conferences, actually, because I thought that this is the spot where people will talk about the future, which was also the case. Visited around a dozen of them, from Brussels to London to Germany, like different kind of settings. Also different shades of green, I would say, from hardcore circular economy conferences to the lobby of waste to energy plants somewhere in Brussels, and understood the entire spectrum, talked to a lot of companies in the recycling space to really understand what are their issues. And at the end of it, I did a certification for a waste management officer, which is a thing here in Germany because we have certifications for everything. But that gave me a good perspective on where's the market going, or where does the market think they're going? What's the problems they are facing now, and what is also the legislative framework for waste management here in Europe? And at that time, I met we had three co-founders in Cleanup, Florin, who was working with me in Avrius before. And around that time, I also met Bosse, who's the third co-founder. And we just said, look, we cannot solve the problem of plastic pollution from our desks here in Germany. We need to go where the problem actually is. We have a good network in India, so we decided, let's just board a plane and go to India to cross-compare what is working here in Europe, or what is also not working so well here in Europe, and what is working or not working in countries like India, where, for example, the Ganges is producing a lot of ocean-bound plastic. And that's really how it went down.
Mm. Got it. So the actual problem of plastic pollution, you already said it a little bit, is very related to the quality of waste management, right? Like in Germany, for example, you have, I think, kind of waste collection system where manufacturers of plastic have to pay a certain fee for then the plastic waste to be collected and recycled when possible, right? Whereas I guess I've never been to India, but I guess in India that system may not, at least not work properly if the plastic all ends in the Ganges. Is that the kind of main reason why we end up with pollution?
Yeah, I think that's the core takeaway we can take. I think we need to generally separate into downstream solutions, which is what we are in, like the proper waste management, and then in upstream solutions, which is bringing better material to the market, solving the problem at the top of the hierarchy. And we need both, right? That's without a question. We need both solutions. We focus on the downstream, on the actual waste management. And the surprising thing for me, at least personally, was when I went to India, is like, that the actual circular economy, like in regards of recycling, in my perspective, works much better than, for example, here in Europe. They have higher recycling rates because in these economies, nothing that is of value is thrown away, right? It's like the PET bottles are collected by informal waste workers, brought to small purchasing points where they will just turn it into new products, like be it yarn, be it, I don't know, furniture, whatever. But when you go to India, or also Indonesia, wherever in the world, even here in Europe, right? What people leave behind is flexible packaging, is multi-layer packaging. This plastic basically has no value, so nobody wants to collect it. And it's extremely lightweight. If it's not properly managed and you have weather phenomena like the monsoon, it will just wash it away. The wind will blow it away into sewage systems, into streams, and from there it will enter the ocean. So the problem really is that there's no proper waste management system in place. Anything that is of value is picked out of this not really well-functioning stream, but everything that has no value is basically left behind, and from there, if nobody's taking care of it, it will go into the ocean.
Got it. So let's try to understand your model. Essentially, I think for anybody that's listening, people are probably quite familiar with carbon offsetting, where you buy, basically, you pay for a company to plant trees most of the time and to basically kind of compensate your carbon emissions. Is that a good analogy? And can you kind of just explain your model? How does it exactly work? Who are your customers? Mm-hmm. What are they paying you? And what do you do as a result of that whole process?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the analogy generally is correct. In so far that credits always work as a substitute or as a financial injection into a system to make it better, right? And for plastic, I think before really going into our model, there's one thing that needs to be understood, and that is if I run a waste pickup service, for example, if I go from house to house to house to collect plastic waste, I do receive some items that I can sell, but the majority of waste that I'm getting has no value. Now, I still need to pay the people who collect the material, right? I need to pay for logistics. And in the end, I also need to pay the company that's going to take care of the waste in regards of, for example, co-processing or winning back the energy out of it. And that's a horrible business model. I like there's zero profit in there. Like you're losing money, and that's why we need those plastic credits to incentivize people to still do the process. In the end, it is a service, right? It's not a value extracting activity, but really a service. And that's essentially what we do in our model. So we talk to brands that want to take responsibility for plastic waste. Some of them have plastic in their packaging. Some of them don't have plastic packaging at all. But what really unites them is that they want to do something against plastic pollution. So they basically buy a certain volume of plastic that should be managed, that should be properly managed. And we pass on that contract to collection partners in India, in Indonesia, in Brazil, to properly collect and recover this plastic waste. That's our model. And we take a transaction fee on these, so to say, plastic credits. So one plastic credit equals 1 ton of plastic waste managed. Yeah.
Got it. That's very interesting. And why did you initially decide for that model where you're partnering with companies mm-hmm. in India, for example, to collect that plastic waste? And I guess, where mm-hmm. are they collecting yeah. that waste?
The reason why we decided to partner with them is because everything is already there. You know, the infrastructure is already there. There's people out there who already collect waste, but they collect very specific types of plastic, right? They don't collect everything. Then there's logistics in place. There's the warehouses in place to store waste. There's balers in place that can compress the waste to make it cheaper for logistics. We have the disposal endpoints in place, right? The cement factories basically are all over the world, and they can use this material to replace coal in their production process. But someone needs to pay for the process. And that's really what we discovered and said, you know, we don't need to invest into infrastructure. We need to make sure that the service of collecting this plastic waste is paid for. And this is why we decided to partner with organizations that are collecting plastic. And the thing that we do is we say, look, we also pay you for the non-recyclable part of the plastic waste. We don't want to interfere with anything that is recyclable. And for that, we didn't need to invest into any new technology or whatever. The only thing that we did is we built a platform that allows for two things. The first thing is really to track and trace the material. So they need to deliver proof of work. They need to take pictures of the waste on the scale. They need to deliver weighing notes, truck details throughout the entire process. And the other thing is we connect these collection partners to disposal endpoints where we know that the material is treated safely. And that's what we built the platform for. And that's also what giving the transparency to brands that they can trust that the impact that they pay for is actually performed.
Let's zoom in on that, actually, right? So one issue, I guess, is a lot of plastic gets collected already, right? So you don't want to sell a service that's basically just paying people some additional money to collect the stuff that they collect anyways, because then you don't have an additional impact. So how is your approach on making sure that you're generating additional impact, collecting additional plastic that would otherwise never get collected? How do you do that?
Yeah. We focus on one very specific material group, which is multi-layer packaging. I think the best example for that would be like your standard chips bag, where you have a metallized inlay and a plastic outlay. These materials can't be recycled in a mechanical way. And we, as I mentioned, they need to take pictures of the waste that is produced. That way we can also see that it's actually the material that we get. And we do sample testing within our reverse logistic chain to make sure that it is really the material that we asked to be collected. And for that plastic, like basically every study shows that I think the unofficial collection rate of that material is at 1%. The official is at 0, the unofficial is at 1%. And that shows a lot, right? Nobody wants to have this material, and basically whatever euro we spend on that kind of material will be additional. And that's really how we make sure that there's additionality in the collection. So we do not collect PET bottles. We do, because they are already collected. We do not collect HDPE shampoo bottles. We only collect flexible packaging.
Mm-hmm. And then is your focus on preventing ocean plastic specifically? And if so, how do you make sure, how do you focus on that? Do the collection companies kind of focus on rivers and oceans, or on where does the plastic actually get picked up?
You know, in an ideal world, every single household would be connected to a managed waste service. Someone like we, or at least like I grew up, we have the waste bin in front of our house. The workers come once a week, pick it up, and that way the material doesn't end up in the environment in the first place. And that's the kind of system that we want to incentivize. Quite frankly, this is sometimes a bit difficult in communication because it's not as sexy, so to say, as picking up a bottle out of the ocean, but it is what needs to happen. Because, you know, if I spend €1 on such a process, it should be the most efficient way. I want to recover the plastic in the most efficient way, so to say, that I can collect more, right? That's where we should get. And household collection is the most efficient way. It doesn't make sense to throw it in the environment and then pay someone to pick it out from the environment. So that's our number one priority. So we do specifically incentivize household collections. However, we also see the need to pay for certain infrastructure interventions, like, for example, river barriers. So we do have partners that also collect plastic out of rivers to make sure that it is treated safely, because, you know, there's this massive inflow and we just need to make sure that we intercept at the right points. What we as a company don't do is we don't really pay a premium for material that is recovered from the ocean or that is recovered from the rivers, but we, with our partners, we have we're still a startup, so prices do range slightly, but we try to pay a very standardized fee and then let the partners work with that, right? And then it's up to them to decide, okay, I get X amount of money for a ton of non-recyclable plastic waste. What is the most efficient way for me to get to this material? So we take a very market-based approach to the problem.
That's great. I guess there's a few kind of prominent startups out there and solutions, like, for example, the Ocean Cleanup is probably one that received a lot of kind of public attention that's focused on. Yeah, and that's great. I think they kind of brought that whole topic of plastic pollution to the mass attention, which is great. And I think it's a great company and great ambitious goals as well that they're pursuing with basically collecting plastic in a tech-driven way from rivers and oceans directly, right? But what I love about your solution is you're kind of going a bit earlier than that, because the problem is it's a bit of a leaky bucket at some point if you're trying to collect it from the oceans, but you're not stopping the inflow into the oceans or, generally speaking, into the environment. It's not just the oceans, right? So really love the approach. And I guess you're just putting incentive price tag onto plastic to say, hey, all the stuff that's not valuable at the moment because there's no value to it inherently, we are putting a value on it, we pay you for it, and we recover that from companies you work with, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think mentioning the ocean cleanup brings up a very important point. And you know, everybody who's trying to do something about the problem gets criticism. It doesn't matter. You can try to be the best company in the world, you will be criticized. And I personally believe that this is the entirely wrong approach. Everyone that is in the market is in the market to solve the problem. And we need all solutions, right? There is not a silver bullet to the problem, but we need every single one in the market. And, you know, the Ocean Cleanup doesn't need us to finance their collection. I think they are pretty well off themselves. They are run super professionally. But they essentially have the same issue, right? That they are fishing out a certain type of material from the ocean that has just a very limited value, and they somehow still need to finance their boat. So it's always this, what's my bottom line then? And this needs to be fixed. And by passing on, in theory, by passing on the cost to the polluter, in the capitalistic world, you're also setting the incentive to pollute less, right? And that's what we need to keep in mind. So everything goes into this direction of an extended producer responsibility, like polluter pays, and that's what's important.
Got it. Let's talk about the polluters, or let's say your customers, which in some cases they don't even use plastic packaging because they, I think you actually require them to have a policy in place to reduce plastic emissions anyways, because that's the best way to start as a company. But then when they work with you, tell us a bit more about why they usually work with you, and what type of companies are usually interested in taking plastic out of the environment.
Yeah, I think the motivations are in the core always the same. I really truly believe that every single company that we work with wants to do something good for the planet. I don't really believe in the fact that there's people out there who really want to do harm to the planet, which might sound super naive, but in the end, that's just my belief that keeps me going. And that's the core motivation. And then, you know, there are industries where there is just no way around plastic. In certain applications, you are, for example, not allowed to use recycled plastic for hygiene reasons, especially in food. Then in other cases, if companies really do their life cycle assessment of the packaging and of the entire process of what they do, plastic might be the most sustainable option, right? Again, let's take the example of food, and I hope that I'm not making too many enemies here. But the biggest problem would be if the food goes bad on the shelves. Then everything that was done before it went onto the shelves was for nothing. Like all the carbon emissions of harvesting, transportation, etc., were for nothing. So it is about to keep a product as fresh until it is consumed, basically, right? And plastic, in many cases, is the thing that enables us to do that, because we as a society demand that kind of convenience. And it is a complex world, right? And if basically at some point you can decide as a company, I'm not going to use plastic at all anymore, which might mean for me as a company that I need to go out of business, and then someone else is going to pop up and do the exact same thing again. So What I don't want to kind of protect any kind of company to say we will not work on our packaging. However, in some cases, I would also like to ask the consumer to at least give the companies a chance to explain why they decide in certain ways. I think that's what consumers should do. They should hold companies responsible. They should ask for reasons, but also give them the chance to explain themselves.
Got it.
And I think for these companies that really did the math, that looked at the options, what can I do, what can't I do, what works in the specific market that I'm working in, right? It's like if you work with a biodegradable plastic, for example, that is not accepted in every single composting unit, not across the UK, not across Germany, and you might actually do harm to the actual recycling stream in the market that you're in. So you have to look at these things from a lot of different perspectives. It is always complex. And again, I can only encourage every single consumer to demand for information from the brands that they're working with. And if there's no other option, then we come in basically and give companies the chance to say, look, we know that we are not perfect. We know there's currently no better alternative to that. The best that we can do is basically then to say, okay, at least I'm making sure that definitely 100% of the plastic that I put out there will be recovered on a net balance, so to say.
Great. I want to dive a bit deeper on you building Clean Hub and some of the challenges in your journey and kind of your journey in general, and zoom in on that. So I think what you've done, if I summarize that, you've built like a really interesting economical system and platform for companies to compensate their plastic emissions or have a net positive impact, basically, where almost kind of each product they sell kind of takes plastic out of the environment, ideally, right? And you have a network of partners that is actually collecting the plastic. You have ways of certifying that the plastic is actually getting collected. So it's quite a bit of a complex system of a lot of moving parts. If we go back to day one, you wanting to solve this problem, knowing some people in India, and you're like, okay, maybe that's one avenue to go down. Like, since that day, what's been like the hardest part of like making all these puzzle pieces fit together and then also sell that as a product to companies?
Yeah. I mean, for me personally, the most difficult thing was I was in Mumbai to basically close our first partnership on the ground when Germany closed its borders due to COVID. And I was on one of the last planes back to Germany. And suddenly we had to operate in a country where where I have no cultural background of operating, right? It's like every country is always slightly different in the practices. And however, we had people that we could trust in India. And then we had to build this entire thing completely remote. And at the same time, we're fundraising. I'm very happy that our investor put the trust in us and says, like, I know you can get this done. And everybody was extremely supportive from our investor side as well. And there was in the beginning a bit of a shock, right? Because also India, for example, was extremely hit by COVID. Operations were down. Nobody really knew where things are going. There was probably one of the toughest things. But I think it was a great learning opportunity for us as well, because we didn't know where the journey would go. It forced us to be extremely cash conservant. So we built this entire thing with four full-time employees, which was us founders and Rodney, who's doing our sales. And that allowed us to build everything up extremely efficiently, right? And really focus on things that were important. And I think, that's kind of the silver lining, and probably will also shape really our culture as a company moving forward. It's like that we were born into this remoteness, that we were born into staying efficient with what we have in regards of resources. And that was really the biggest challenge, I would say.
Got it. And did you have your first customers confirmed before that whole system was set up even and kind of figured out along the way? Or did you kind of spend a lot of time really developing the partnerships, collection partnerships, and then started to sell that to customers?
We started the company in January 2020, then started to focus on the operations. And in really June, we started our outreach. So Q3, we started. First customer was, to be honest, my best friend from university who has his own e-commerce store. He was the first one to get the ball going. But from there onwards, we immediately focused on setting up a sales approach that would allow us to talk to as many customers as possible. So it was a lot of sending emails, sending LinkedIn requests afterwards. And then the beauty of our model, I would also say, is people talk about it, right? And that brings us also a good amount of traffic that we don't need to pay for. That was kind of the progression of what we did. So first focus on making sure that we can keep the promise that we delivered to our customers, to make sure the technology works, that we have control over the reverse logistic chains. So we also send auditors into the companies that we work with to make sure that labor standards are in place, etc. That we really can track and trace the collection of plastic. And then we really went out into the market.
Great. And if we look at the future, what do you think is kind of the biggest barrier to success or the trickiest bit to solve for to make your model work at scale? Let's imagine kind of really removing massive amounts of plastic worldwide, having kind of massive amounts of corporate customers. What's kind of the thing you need to figure out, or anybody that's in that space is trying to figure out? But because it doesn't seem like anybody has figured it out yet on at scale, right? There's no company that's like currently doing what you do at a massive scale. So like, what is it that's kind of stopping people from getting to that scale?
I think, first of all, the timing is right now. People are very, very much on top of what's going on. So I do believe that the timing just wasn't maybe right in the past for models like that. I really do believe, and we see that with our customers, that consumers really appreciate when companies take responsibility, when companies are also transparent about how they conduct business. And that's a massive change that the consumers are driving that is going on right now. And I do believe that this is, that depending on how fast we are in that regard as consumers to challenge brands in the way that they do business, and the faster models like us will scale. Because what I can tell you quite frankly is it's not the difficult part is not to get plastic waste collected. It is a manual process. Obviously it costs money, but it is not. And I mean this in the most respectful way possible. It is not rocket science. Our partners are doing an amazing job, right? Absolutely. And I have so much respect for everyone who's working in the industry and who's been working in this industry for the past 30, 40 years. And nobody really cared about what they were doing. And only now it comes to the surface of, oh my God, there's something going on. But it is a service that can be provided. It's the willingness to pay. And really putting the money where your mouth is, what we that we need to get going and get more brands to sign up for that. That's what I see as the biggest barrier.
Got it. And are you focusing much more on helping brands communicate that impact as well? Are you thinking about providing like certifications or any sort of kind of materials where they can say, hey, we are kind of Clean Hub certified, or that's our impact we have?
Yeah, that's actually now also the focus for the next several months. We have our first hire since besides Rodney, who's also one of my best friends, she will start in May, focusing really on content, on explaining all that I just explained to you, right? It's like, because people need to be educated about the problem as well, and people need to be willing to learn about these things to really appreciate what the brands are doing also with our system. And this is really where we want to double down on also to help our customers explain their impact better. And also, I think we had a lot of learnings in the past on how you can communicate on sustainability or your sustainability initiatives. And for me, that's clearly transparency. And that's our biggest bet by also making the recovery transparent. But really providing the data that proves that the plastic waste was collected. That's really what we focus on. And I mean, the one thing that we really verify in the end is how much plastic was collected, right? Making impact visible, making impact measurable. That's the big trend in my eyes.
That's great. Let's cover one more question, which is my last question. How do you think the world will look like in 10 years' time if Clean Hub succeeds? How does the world look like?
A lot more circular, which might sound funny because we focus on a very linear waste stream. But what we want to really do is set up collection systems for waste. And that's just a crucial part for the circular economy. You know, if every piece of waste would be collected from a doorstep level, the quality of waste that you would receive would be much better. So it's better recyclable. The collection system is a lot more efficient. So you get bigger volumes at a cheaper price, which also lowers the price of a secondary raw material. I hope that's not getting too complex, but in my eyes it's a lot more circular And our big goal, like basically our North Star is, and that might sound extremely ambitious, but that's the startup founder in me talking, is like, our big goal is to really halve the amount of plastic entering the oceans. So cut it in half again. I think sometimes you need these B-hacks and,
love it.
We're still a startup, right?
Love it. I had Daniel Epstein, the founder of Unreasonable Group, which you may be aware of. They're supporting a lot of kind of scaling impact startups, and he calls it, I think, BFPs, big fucking problems. So you are definitely solving one of those, and it's great to see that you have such an ambitious vision and that you're already right now creating the economics that incentivizes companies to take action and fund taking plastic out of the environment. Yeah. It was really great talking to you, Joel. Thanks very much for joining me, and all the best for the next few years and decades ahead.
Thank you very much. And if I may say that we are hiring, if you're a product designer or product Absolutely. Manager, feel free to reach out.
Perfect. So I guess you'll be hiring new positions all the time. So whenever you're listening to this episode, I think that's cleanhub.io. People can find out about opportunities at CleanHub, right?
Exactly.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Michael. Have a good day.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, share the episode, leave us a review, and consider becoming a supporter on buymeacoffee.com/impacthustlers. This means a lot to me. Thank you very much for tuning in, and see you next time. Bye.